Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Gift of Grace on the Word 1220. This is Phil Giuliani here on another Sunday night, and this is a program where we read and teach God's Word, and we proclaim salvation in the kingdom in Jesus the Messiah. And now that we are into the Passover, Holy Week, Good Friday, Resurrection Day season, and since in most of my ministries are connecting Old Testament, New Testament passages, I thought we should just spend a few minutes talking about how Passover led to Jesus' sacrifice on the cross as the ultimate delivery from slavery. And during this time of coronavirus pandemic and other judgments that are coming on the world, and I'm sure to say there will be more, because remember, Jesus said this will be like a woman in labor. These are just the first contractions. But I want to start by talking about the background of Passover. And I hope you all know the stories. And, you know, we can go back and go through the patriarchs who did sacrifices of lambs. And we can go back to Joseph, who then got the people into Egypt. And, you know, that's a whole nother story of deliverance, where Joseph, being a prefigurement, a type of Jesus, a type of Messiah, saves his whole family from the famine that's in Cana and brings them to Egypt, where they thrive for a certain amount of time, and then they're enslaved by the Egyptians. And we have to look at Passover. We have to look at the slavery that the Israelites experienced, which was a physical slavery. This stands for us having a slavery to sin and having a spiritual slavery that we need to be delivered from, just like people had to be delivered from physical slavery. And we get to Moses, who is, you know, he's the law giver. He's not actually the law giver. He's the mediator between God and man. Moses is the mediator of the old covenant. And the old covenant is sealed in blood. And we have to keep that in mind, because, you know, many people read through the Torah, and I know most of you have not done my Torah class, but as you read through the Torah, you find this constant discussion about sacrifice and blood, and it's very messy business. And the reason is because sin is very messy business. And when you sin, you forfeit your life, not just your spiritual life, but also your physical life. You know, Paul tells us in Romans that all men sin, therefore all men die. Everyone sins, and that's why we die. We have physical death because of Adam and Eve. It wasn't supposed to be this way. But because of them, we not only have physical death, we also have spiritual death, because we inherit Adam's nature, as I like to call it, and we become slaves to that. And I always use the example of, you know, when you're raising little kids, you never have to teach them how to be bad. You never have to teach kids how to lie. You never have to teach kids how to be selfish. You have to teach them how not to do those things. You have to teach them, don't go here, don't go there, don't say this, don't say that, do this, do that. Because their natural tendency is to go to the wrong. And the deliverance from that is what Passover prefigured. And the interesting thing of it is the timing of it was such that the Israelites could not deliver themselves in any way from the slavery, from the yoke of the Egyptians. There was no way they were going to rise up and start a revolution. They were making bricks. They were downtrodden. And so God says to Moses, I'm going to make the plan. I'm going to do the delivering. All you have to do is to cooperate. And he he puts kind of an unusual, as I discussed last couple of weeks ago, I think, kind of an unusual, strange plan into effect, which, just like when Paul said, the cross is foolishness to those that are perishing, because it doesn't make any sense. What God told Moses to do didn't make any sense either, because after sending plagues on the Egyptians, and with each plague, more or less, he kept hardening Pharaoh's heart. And this is always a big discussion in all my Bible study groups. Why would God harden Pharaoh's heart? You know, why did Pharaoh not have a choice of what he did? Well, he hardened Pharaoh's heart because he wanted to make sure that the Egyptians, and especially the Israelites, knew that it was he who did the delivering. They did not deliver themselves. And we have to look at that, even in the 21st century after the cross, to look at the overall situation that we're in. If you are living in a slavery to sin, or even if you are just what I call a card-carrying sinner, which everybody is, there is no way you can deliver yourself from that. You cannot make up for even one sin by doing something. Saying a prayer, doing some work, giving a dollar to the homeless guy, you still stand guilty and condemned. And so we are in a slavery, just like they were in a physical slavery. And God brings a method to them, which involves blood. And you notice the importance of the blood, because first of all, they had to find an unblemished lamb. And as you're going to hear about probably in the next show, the day that we call Palm Sunday, the day that Jesus rode into Jerusalem as king to fulfill Zechariah 9:9, was the day that people went out to shop for a lamb that they were going to use for the Passover. So while they were looking for a physical lamb to take home, the true lamb was riding into the city. But it had to be an unblemished lamb. It couldn't have any faults. It couldn't be sick. It couldn't be spotted. It couldn't limp. It had to be unblemished and whole. And the lamb underwent a bloody death. The lamb stayed with the people for 4 days. In other words, it lived with a family, just like Jesus lived with us for a certain amount of time. And then the lamb was killed. So people got to know the lamb, but then the lamb was killed. And that blood from the lamb protected the people who were in the house from the curse, from the Passover, from the death of the firstborn. And it was the death of the firstborn, as I'm sure you know. If you were the first one born in your family, you died. If your kids of your kids, the one who was firstborn, died. If you had a pet cat, if he was the first one born of the litter, he died. This was across the board, people and animals. It says specifically in Exodus that there was no house in Egypt that wasn't affected by this. And that the Israelites heard the Egyptians crying and wailing and shouting out all through the night. And what a horrible thing that must have been. But God said, if you take this lamb, if you take the blood from the lamb and put it on the doorposts of your house, the curse will not affect you. If you don't, you will have the curse. In other words, this is not a suggestion that, well, maybe if you put some blood, that might work. It's possible. No, he says, this is the only way to protect yourselves from the curse. There is no other way. And so that night, they killed the lamb, put the lamb's blood on the doorpost. And we don't know if 100% of them did it, probably not. But if you did not have that blood, you were killed. Your firstborn was killed just like the Egyptians. If you had the blood, you were saved from that curse. And so this was the important thing, because this was the sovereign deliverance from their physical slavery. And it sounds like kind of a silly plan. And after all, you kill a lamb, you put the blood, and then I'll be okay. That involves a certain amount of trust. But the main thing it involves is faith. And of course, the scripture through and through talks about faith. And now without faith, it's impossible to please God. And Jesus always talks about, oh, this person has more faith than I found in Israel. Or, oh, even this foreigner has faith. And, oh, this guy has the faith and she has the faith. And then Paul goes on to say, it's by faith that these things are done. You know, Abraham had faith and it was counted as righteousness. So they had faith that this bloody sacrifice of this lamb was going to somehow sovereignly deliver them from slavery because they couldn't do it themselves. You know, interestingly, as I always point out, God didn't tell the people to start making weapons and start killing Egyptians and start a guerrilla war, start some kind of terrorist movement. And then after a couple of years, the Egyptians will be sick of you and they'll let you go. No, he says, here's what you do. You get a lamb, you keep it 4 days, you kill the lamb, you put the blood on the doorpost of your house, then you eat the lamb, and you eat unleavened bread, and you eat bitter herbs. And then you're going to see what I'm going to do to the Egyptians. You know, God comes right out and tells them, then you're going to see what I'm going to do to the Egyptians. And they did this as a matter of faith. They couldn't sit down themselves and say, you know, I think if we take a lamb and kill it and put the blood, I think we'll be okay. No, this was a sovereign divine plan which prefigures the cross. There is no other way to be saved other than through the cross of Jesus. And I know those of you that are listening to this already know that, but it's always good to remember because the cross has been moved out of the center of most Christian churches nowadays, and it's just become either an entertainment center with very nice music and very nice people all looking nice to a social justice church where we're mainly concerned with recycling and immigration. But that's a subject for another talk. But the main points of this in Exodus are that this is deliverance. This is deliverance from a bad situation. And it's a covenant between the people and God. And the other thing I think it's important to keep in mind is that that once the deliverance happens, the people are heading toward a promised land. And that's a very important concept, a promised land. In their case, it was a land of freedom. It was had milk and honey, which was a symbol of fertility and wealth and abundant crops and so forth. But for us, who are Gentile Christians of the 21st century, we're heading to a much better promised land, which is heaven. So through this deliverance, putting the blood of the cross on you and having that blood atone for your sin, you are then heading for the ultimate promised land. Well, yes, you know, we may wander around in the wilderness for 40 years, like the Israelites, but ultimately we're being guided to that promised land in the new covenant. So then we see how this blood atonement, because God says without the shedding of blood, there's no forgiveness of sin. And he points out several times, many times, that life is in the blood. And so this is why when you sin, you die. Your blood has to be shed. Or alternately, something or someone dies in your place. At the Passover time, it was a lamb. Then later, 1500 years later, or whatever it was Messiah. It was Jesus who, through his blood, provided the atonement. And we put, you know, Paul points out that we put that blood on our heart. We put that blood on our doorpost, so to speak. So when the angel of death flies over, we're not going to be caught up in the curse. We're not going to die in the curse. So that's the important connection. And at that Last Supper, which was Jesus's final earthly Seder, and every year I get amazed that Most Christians don't realize that the Last Supper was a Passover Seder. That just blows my mind. And this year, unfortunately, is quite different than most years. I've had five Seders scheduled, and four of them have canceled. One is still pending, but if you've never been to a Messianic Passover Seder, you should try to go to one, probably next spring. But as he was about to become the Passover sacrifice, he made some changes in that meal that all his apostles, who had been to many, many Seders, had not experienced before. And without going through it all, because I want to talk a little bit more about it later, is, you know, there's ritualistic washings that take place. And this is when he washed the apostles' feet. And this is why they couldn't figure out what he was doing. Because at no time was this ever done during a Seder. He did this at a time when people washed their hands. He bent down and washed their feet. There's a children's game during the Seder called the Apikoman. And the children, there's a piece of matzah, a piece of unleavened bread that's hidden. After it's broken, okay, there's three pieces of matzah in a little beautiful case that the Jews call the unity. Three in one. And we, of course, understand the symbolism of that. But you take the middle matzah, the middle piece, the second piece, and break it. And you put half of it in another little pouch, which is made out of linen and symbolizes a burial shroud. But then that piece of bread is hidden. And then near the end of the meal, the children go and look for it. And when they bring it back, whoever finds it gets a prize. Well, that's a children's game that's played at traditional Seder meals. But at that particular Seder, Jesus took that Afikoman and instituted the Eucharist, the Lord's Supper. And that's when he broke the bread and distributed it. It was part of a children's game. That's amazing. And, of course, during a traditional Seder, there were four cups of wine. That night, they only had three cups of wine. Jesus consecrated the third cup, which the Jews call the cup of redemption. The cup of redemption. These things are so prophetic and show the types and prefigurements of what's happening. And the third cup, the cup of redemption, became the blood that delivered the people from slavery. Just like the blood of the lamb liberated the people who were physical slaves in Egypt, this blood delivers people who are spiritual slaves to sin. And what's important is, just like in the Passover, he does the delivering. He does the deliverance. Whichever one of those is correct. But he is the deliverer. There was no other way that you can deliver yourself from sin. There was no other way that you can present yourself for the kingdom, because God says several times in the Old Testament, and it's repeated in the New Testament in various ways, that nothing unholy can come near him. Nothing unholy can enter into heaven. Well, that presents a huge problem, because the number of people in the world that are holy is zero. So heaven would be a very lonely place. But we know that there's lots of people there. Not most people, but a lot of people there. Because the deliverance comes from him, not from ourselves. So he does the deliverance. They couldn't do it themselves. And we can't do it ourselves. And both ways, you know, God hardened Pharaoh's heart so that his glory could show forth. So the Israelites and the Egyptians would both know that he delivered the Israelites. We're delivered in this way from sin. Also, he shows his glory through that, because we know that we can't deliver ourselves from sin. Oh, you can give it a good try, But that usually doesn't last more than a few hours, or, I mean, if you're really good, a couple of days. And then you're right back into it. So we know we can't deliver ourselves. We know that we're not holy. We know that we stand condemned. And we know that you're liable, that we're liable for judgment. But he shows his glory by delivering us. Because if you have the blood of the Lamb, that's with a capital B, capital L, you're saved from this ultimate curse. And you're instead on your way to the promised land. And remember how the curse worked. You know, the firstborn of the Egyptians was killed. Of the entire people, the firstborn of the Egyptians was killed. The firstborn of the Israelites was dedicated to the Lord and became his inheritance. The whole people became his inheritance, but the firstborn became his special inheritance. The firstborn was dedicated. And this is why Mary and Joseph took little 40-day-old Jesus to the temple, because when you had your first boy at 40 days, you went and presented him. If you had a girl, you went and presented her at 66 days. But the issue was, that child was dedicated to the Lord. So Passover is a festival of freedom. It's freedom from slavery. Holy Week, Good Friday, Easter / Resurrection Day, whatever you like to call it in your tradition, is a freedom festival. It's the sacrifice is done, deliverance is obtained, and God shows us that he is the only one who can do the delivering, and that he frees us in a sovereign way. And the other interesting thing about, and boy, we're really going through highlights of the Seder, but I know pretty soon the music's going to start. But the story of the Seder has to be told in the first person. This is specified in the book of Exodus. So when you're gathered around the Seder table, and whoever's leading the event and other people who then read along, you have to say, when I was in Egypt, when I was in Egypt, when we were in Egypt, when we were delivered, when I came out of Egypt, when I came out of Egypt. You don't say, when those people came out of Egypt. You don't say, when our ancestors came out of Egypt. The story has to be told in the first person. And that's kind of interesting, and you think, oh, that's great for national solidarity and so forth. But the point of it really is that each of us have to go to the Lamb. Each of us have to go to the cross. I can't go for you. You can't go for me. I can't go for those guys over there. None of those guys over there can go for those people sitting over there. Each person has to go individually to the cross. Each person has to go individually to the Lamb. And this is why God specifies that the story has to be told in the first person. And so these are just kind of quick general comparisons of why it's important to note what happened at the Passover and how that still affects us. And you know, when you hear the, you know, TV announcers just glibly say, well, you know, tonight our Jewish listeners or viewers will start celebrating Passover, and, you know, congratulations, and isn't that fun? You have to think what this actually means to us as believers in Yeshua, Jesus the Messiah, that we don't have a lamb outside our house that we're going to slaughter that night and then cook it and then eat it on the run with unleavened bread and bitter herbs. But we have the true Lamb, capital T, capital L, who died for us 2,000 years ago. And that blood, it's already applied to you. If it's not automatically applied, if you apply it, if you let it be applied, if you turn to it and say, this is the only way my sin can be atoned for. I have faith. I trust in this, that this is the only way my sin can be atoned for. Then you'll be saved from the curse. Then you will be sovereignly delivered. Then you will go across a Red Sea. And then you may wander in the wilderness for a little while. But ultimately, you're going to reach that promised land which is heaven, which is paradise. And Jesus is going to greet you there with wounds in his hands and his feet to show you why you're there. Not because you're so awesome, not because you're the most wonderful, handsome, richest person there ever was, but because he sovereignly delivered you. And let's keep these things in mind during this Passover season. And I hear the music coming on. And so I hope you join us again next week. I hope you've had an awesome Lord's Day today, even though I know that nobody, I think, has been able to go to church. But you can have church at home. You can pray. And we'll see you next week.